This is Audible.
Audible Studios presents Maestro, Legend of Drizzt, Homecoming, Book 2. Written by R.A. Salvatore. Performed by Victor Baveen.
Prelude. By Lolf's furry legs, Braylon Jankay exclaimed, shaking his head in disbelief at the sheer slaughter unfolding in front of him. Hundreds of demons, thousands of demons, had swarmed into a circular cavern in the Masterways, the complex of large passageways that were the main entrance of Menzo Baranzon. They were just outside the city. Dark elf wizards and priestesses lined the cavern walls. The bombardment of magic raining down upon the abyssal forces was beyond anything Braylon had ever imagined, let alone witnessed. 100 lightning bolts slashed an equal torrent of fireballs. Magical storms pelted the intruding demons, zombie-like manes and simian balgura, pounding them down, tripping them on the icy floor where they were finished off in a haze of steam as fireballs exploded atop them. The drow trap had sprung to devastating effect, but the demons kept coming. "Can't they kill them all?" the astounded Braylon said. "Be ready," Tiago snapped at him. "Some will get through, and if you fail me on the flank, know that I will not be merciful." Braylon stared at the upstart Bayenri noble for a few moments, doing well to hide his utter contempt. Jarlaxle and Beniago had warned him of Tiago's volatile temperament and haughty attitude. Jarlaxle knew the inner workings of the Bayenri nobles better than anyone outside the immediate family, and Beniago was Tiago's cousin. Still, Braylon had spent the last decade serving in Bregan D'Earth. He had lived more than half his 95 years with Jarlaxle's band, and most of those years had been outside the city. Now, back in the fold of Menzo Baranzon, Tiago's arrogance, the venom dripping from his every word, and those of many of the other drow, particularly those nobles in House Doerden where Braylon now served, appalled him. Nothing had changed other than Braylon's escape from and perception of the stilted reality that was Menzo Baranzon. He had been so accustomed to it in his earlier days, so numb to it, but now every word jarred him, and it took all of his self-control to hide his true disgust at the nefarious ways of his own people. The cavern walls continued shaking from the magical barrage being poured upon the attacking demon hordes in the larger chamber to the west. One brilliant flash set Tiago and Braylon back on their heels. "Revelin's lightning web," Tiago remarked, managing a nod despite the sour look upon his face. Ravel, the former Zorlaran house wizard now of House Doerden, was making quite a name for himself with that ritual addition to the common lightning bolt. Having witnessed it firsthand on several occasions, the two drow standing at the front of the corridor defense could only imagine the scores of demons now melting under its devastating effects. No sooner had Tiago finished the remark than there came a cacophony of stunning proportions, ground shaking, and with explosions echoing along the corridor walls likely all the way back to Menzo Baranzon. Even out here, some 100 strides from the battle, Braylon could feel the heat of the magical conflagration. He loosened his grip on his swords just a bit, having a hard time imagining that any demons would come out this end of that slaughterhouse. "The magical confrontation nears its end, then," Tiago added when the shaking at last abated. Like the wizardry displays in times of celebration, spellcasters always liked to end with a grand display. Braylon nodded. Ravel had told them all that the lightning web would strike as the cavern slaughter was winding down, and the ensuing crescendo only confirmed that. Almost certainly, then, the demonic reinforcements had slowed to a trickle, and so the wizards and priestesses had pulled out their last great display. "The slaughter in the cavern nears its end," Tiago shouted. His call carried back to all tendrils of the regiment with the weight of an undeniable command. As the weapons master assigned to this day's primary war party, Tiago stood in full command of the warrior forces around him, including nearly 100 foot soldiers and 10 times that number of orc, goblin, bugbear, and kobold slaves. Braylon listened carefully as Tiago barked orders, setting groups in place, organizing teams to go forward and cover the retreat of any wizards or priestesses who could not magically escape the cavern. Certainly, there were dimensional doors set up to get many back into the city, but those were to be used only by the extra spellcasters who had come out for the ambush. Many of the others, including those of House de Werden, had been assigned to the war party, and so would soon be returning to find their place among Tiago's command. What struck Braylon most about Tiago's stream of orders was the tone of the weapon master's voice, one that showed him to be less than pleased by these events. Braylon had noted that combination of imperiousness and frustration from the beginning. His associate, Valis Hune, perhaps the greatest of Bregendierth's scouts, had come to them hours earlier with word of the vast demonic force approaching. Such information had elevated today's events above Tiago, had demanded magical communication with the city's rulers. Sorcere had emptied herself of wizards, Arek Tynalith had sent forth all her priestesses in training, and many of the major houses, including Bayenri and Barrison Delarmgo, had sent forth a cadre of their greatest spellcasters. And that left Tiago sitting back in the peaceful corridor, clutching his unbloodied sword as a great victory was won in the ambush cavern in front of him. Braylon found himself truly amazed at how desperately this weapons master craved battle, and with demons no less. His anger was unrelenting, and Braylon knew it all stemmed from Tiago's failure to secure the head of Drizzt Do'Urden. Movement in the corridor ahead signaled the return of the spellcasters. The priestesses came first, showing little urgency, which confirmed that the slaughter in the cavern had been near complete, and which only deepened the scowl on Tiago's face. They, including Sarabel Do'Urden, Tiago's wife, moved past Tiago and Braylon and the other melee commanders to take up their positions in the third rank, near enough to offer healing to any who might be wounded. Then came the wizards, moving more swiftly, and with those in the rear of the procession glancing back somewhat nervously. Ravel led the way, along with Jaimus Orlaren, who was rumored to be the newest member of the Do'Urden House Court. Both stopped when they got to Tiago, Jaimus waving the others into position among the second rank of warriors. "I have never seen such a horde," Ravel said to Tiago. "We obliterated them by the hundreds, but they simply kept coming." "Kept coming without regard," Jaimus exclaimed, seeming equally at a loss. "They marched without hesitation over the bodies of scores and hundreds of their abyssal kin, and so they too were obliterated. The entire cavern is deep in the piled, empty husks of demons sent home." Ravel started to add to that, but could only shake his head. "But are there more remaining?" Tiago asked, and it was obvious to Braylon and everyone else who heard him that he was hoping the answer would be yes. "Balgura were spotted in the masterways beyond the chamber," Ravel confirmed, rushing to join their comrades in oblivion. Braylon sighed, but tried to disguise it as a cough, unsuccessfully, he knew, when Tiago turned a glare over him. He had battled demons before, of course, as was true of every drow who had grown up in Menzo Berenzon, but he counted Balgura among his least favorite foes. They looked like some joke of the gods, resembling great apes with orange hair and massive limbs. Every Balgura Braylon had ever seen stood as tall as the tip of his finger if he held his arm straight up over his head and four times his weight. Yet despite that imposing size and the sheer strength that accompanied it, Balgura were surprisingly agile and quick, and while one alone could prove to be a dangerous adversary, these howling and screaming beasts were pack hunters fighting in frenzied coordination. Frenzied. Braylon thought that a fitting word for this particular type of demon. The drow was brought from his thoughts by screeching sounds echoing down the tunnel walls. "They've seen the carnage in the cavern," Ravel remarked. "It's amazing that they find no deterrence in climbing over piles of dead comrades." "Perfect soldiers," Tiago replied. "A pity we do not possess more of their ferocity in our own ranks." "You had no more tricks to play on this group?" Braylon dared to ask. "Balgura are better dispatched with magic than the blade." Tiago glared at him again. "Everything is better dispatched with magic," Ravel replied flippantly, and he gave a dramatic sigh and walked away. Tiago turned to watch him go, letting his glare follow the wizard. You're only next to me because of Jarlaxle's assurances, Tiago said to Braylon. Are those assurances worthless, then? Would it serve us both better for me to assign you to stand second to some other warrior? Braylon stared at the noble son of House Bayenry for a long while. A big part of him wanted to take Tiago up on that offer, though he knew it wasn't a sincere question, and indeed, more of a threat. Still, to be away from Tiago would bring relief on so many levels. But the Bregendierth warrior could not ignore the truth. There was no finer warrior to be found at House Doerten, none even close, and indeed few in all of Menzo Berenzon could match Tiago's prowess in battle. Malak Doral, perhaps, and Jarlaxle when he was in the city, which was not often. Beyond that, were there any warriors, weapons masters even, who would serve better in battle than this young upstart noble beside him? Of course not, he answered and bowed politely. I will show you my worth when the blood stains the stones. He meant it, and he knew that he had to mean it. Tiago wasn't keeping him close out of any favors to Jarlaxle. As far as Braylon could tell, Tiago didn't think much of Jarlaxle at all. Tiago had accepted Braylon as his second because Jarlaxle had told him that he'd not find a more worthy battle companion. Now it was incumbent upon Braylon to live up to that billing. Or perhaps, Braylon reminded himself, Tiago wanted him as second because Tiago wanted to keep Jarlaxle's eyes and ears in House Doerden very, very close. With that unsettling possibility in mind, Braylon pointedly reminded himself that if he did not acquit himself well in battle, Tiago would find a way to get him killed in battle. Perhaps Tiago would even do the deed himself if a Balgura could not. Braylon knew that beyond doubt once he looked again at Tiago's expression. The shrieks of the approaching beasts increased, and Braylon tossed that unsettling thought away. He had no room for such doubts now that battle was upon them. And his life was dependent upon the coordination between he and Tiago. Wife! Tiago called, turning back and motioning Sarabel forward. He swung back around just in time to duck behind his shield and catch a leaping Balgura with it. The weight of the blow sent him skidding backward, the demon sliding too, past Braylon's right flank. Braylon stabbed with his right-hand sword, his left blade going forward to fend off the rush of another wild orange-furred demon. The Balgura to his right hissed and spat in protest, and the sword sank in deeply indeed. That seemingly mortal strike didn't fell the creature, though, and it apparently did not even notice as it swung around at Braylon. But then came Tiago, out from behind that strange and beautiful shield, with his magnificent sword sweeping down from on high to split the wounded demon's head in half. Braylon somehow managed to fend off the clawed hands of the demon in front of him and extract his sword from the falling Balgura's ribs. With both weapons in hand, the skilled drow warrior fast turned the flow of battle back against the ferocious beast. Tiago came by him yelling, "Forward!" Braylon was about to argue. He didn't really have anywhere to go. But Tiago's deadly sword flashed out from under his shield, stabbing Braylon's foe in the side. So fine was that blade, Vidranath by name, that a mere sweep of Tiago's arm had it slicing through the thick demon's torso, nearly cutting the thing in half. Braylon tried unsuccessfully not to gasp, then to keep up as Tiago leaped at the incoming swarm of demons, even as they leaped at him. He kicked aside the dying beast's last clawing strikes and went down to one knee, his swords in a double thrust to stab up at a Balgura that had leaped at him. The demon landed and stumbled, skidding on torn feet, easy prey for the drow warriors in the next rank. Feeling quite pleased with his clever maneuver, Braylon started ahead once more, and then he wasn't so pleased with himself and nearly forgot that battle was upon him as he noted the movements of Tiago Bayenry Doerden. The drow noble more than matched the ferocity of his wild opponents. He leaped every which way, battling at clawing hands and biting maws with his fabulous shield, taking the life from one demon after another with that magnificent sword. Engaged once more with a demon, Braylon lost track of Tiago's battles. After his Balgura was finally dead, it took Braylon some time to locate and watch the leaping, scrambling blur that was Tiago. He shook his head in disbelief as he realized that for every attack Tiago blocked, one or more was getting through. A gash opened on Tiago's arm. He nearly lost his grip on Vidranath, but the wound closed almost as it appeared. Braylon glanced back at Tiago's wife, High Priestess Sarabel, to see her in a constant stream of spellcasting. With Tiago as her singular focus, waves of Lolth-given healing magic flowed at the noble son of House Baenri. And Tiago trusted her, obviously. He had left his companion behind and recklessly rushed into the midst of their fierce enemies. If Sarabel let him die, Matron Mother Quenthel Baenri would not be merciful. That realization and the understanding that Tiago had planned this long before brought an unsettling thought to Braylon. Though Tiago did not need him as a flanking protector, could he say the same? He did not have a high priestess standing behind him, imparting unlimited healing. And though he was of House Doerden now, was he really? Braylon Jonquet was Bragan de Earth, minion to Jarlaxle, loyal to Jarlaxle. Tiago had to know that. Tiago wouldn't care if he died in this corridor outside of Menzo Baranzon. Tiago might even welcome that, might indeed have made his attack in the hope of killing off Braylon. All thoughts of catching up to the Baenri faded, and Braylon braced himself defensively, letting the monsters come to him. Tiago rolled sidelong up over one hunched simian demon and felt the explosion of pain as the Balgura hit him hard on the hip. His fine adamantine armor kept the teeth from tearing too deeply, but oh, he felt the pain. The exquisite pain followed by the ecstasy of healing warmth, the embrace of the goddess. He rolled over the Balgura's head, turning as he landed so that as the ape demon turned to pursue, Tiago's readied sword cut it from belly to throat. A high sweep of Vidranath took the head from the next demon in line. He found himself laughing now as a trio of the beasts leaped at him to bury him under their bulk. In his turn, he had noted Braylon Jonquet. Braylon understood now that Tiago considered him expendable, and that was a message the eager young weapons master wanted Jarlaxle to hear. "Bragan de Earth!" he spat from under the pile of clawing and biting ape demons, his shield, magically expanded to its fullest diameter now, keeping the bulk of the attacks away, his sword arm finding its openings to stab ahead and violate demon flesh. And the pain continued, clawed hands and toothy maws finding their hold, and the pleasure of Sarabel's healing washed over him, and the young drow knew true ecstasy. Sarabel could only hope that her tireless, frantic efforts would be enough to keep Tiago from great harm, or even death. If he perished here, the priestess would take her own life rather than face the wrath of the matron mother. Tiago was doing this to her purposely, forcing her into servitude. There would be no gratitude for her efforts here, no words of praise, no tender appreciation later on. She would only know his contempt, forever his contempt. "Until I am matron mother of House Doerden," she resolutely managed to tell herself between spells, and she growled out her next as she nodded with determination. With patience and fortitude, she would gain the upper hand. Or maybe she should just let him die out there, she thought briefly. How easily she could interrupt the healing spells and let the demons rend him to bits. It was a fleeting thought, of course, and not just because of the threat to her life should he die. Her marriage to Tiago made her a Baenri as well as a Doerden, and that was something she would never jeopardize. The thought was buried a moment later, as word filtered down that the matron mother herself had come onto the scene. Sarabel redoubled her efforts, throwing every breath into a spell, filling Tiago with the blessings of Lolth. "What is that fool doing?" she heard behind her, and recognized the voice of the terrible Quenthel Baenri. Globes of fire appeared in the air. Glorious flames, hotter than hellfire, rushed down in killing lines, incinerating demons all around the battling young weapons master. A sweep of Vidranath felled another, the last one near to Tiago. He leaped around, his face a mask of insulted rage, but that expression changed when he took note of Matron Mother Quenthel. Indeed. Quenthel motioned to Braylon, ordering him forward. "He is reckless," the matron mother whispered to Sarabel as she turned to leave. "And ambitious." She paused and caught Sarabel's gaze. "He is brilliant," Quenthel told her, "and you will bring him to me later, uninjured." Sarabel wisely didn't pause in her casting to even acknowledge the matron mother. Quenthelbeanri did not magically flee the scene, as would have been expected of so important and powerful a figure. She walked openly down the corridors of the Masterways and back into Menzo Berenzon, the claw rift on her left, and the huge side chamber that held Tyr Bresh along the wall to her right. Word had spread of the glorious victory in the tunnels, of course, and so she wanted her people to see her returning from the field of glory, humble and magnificent all at once. Her sister, High Priestess Sosumtu Banri, was waiting for her back in the main cavern, as ordered, along with a powerful contingent of the House Banri garrison, enough to deter any murderous hope some plotting matron mother might entertain. The Banris were cheered all the way back to their compound. Matron Mother Quenthel soaked in that glory and understood that it was a necessary and not superfluous parade, both for the reputation of her house and her as Matron Mother. All along that path, she was reminded of the damage that had come to her beloved city. Destruction due to the idiocy of her missing brother. Quenthel knew Gromph had summoned the Prince of Demons into Menzo Berenzon quite unannounced. The monstrous behemoth had left now, but it cut a swath of absolute destruction in his wake. Demogorgon's slashing tail had dug trenches in the walls of Sorcerer, nearly toppling major parts of the structure. The beast had torn down the gates and walls of several houses, including two of the ranking houses with matron mothers sitting on the ruling council. And Demogorgon had dug a trench, for no apparent reason other than he could, halfway across the city and back, to this very exit into the wilds of the Underdark. Many drow had been slain on the beast's journey, Demogorgon's massive tentacles whipping out to grasp unfortunate dark elves, wrenching them in to be devoured or hurling them halfway across the city to splatter into a stalagmite or stalactite. Many others had clawed their own eyes out, driven mad by the gaze of the godlike demon. All because of Gromph. Quenthel could barely contain her growl. There were greater demons than the Manes and Balgura out in the caverns, so Sumptu informed her, something Quenthel had already suspected. Your priestesses spied them? Lurking beyond the circular cavern, yes. Named beasts? So Sumptu nodded. Beasts recognized, yes. And? The spells of banishment failed, so Sumptu admitted. Quenthel stopped her march and stared hard at the priestess, so Sumptu could only shrug. You have been out there among the priestesses, Quenthel said, her voice betraying great concern. There were many high priestesses positioned in that cavern, so Sumptu replied with her typical lack of discernible emotion. Their spells are as potent as my own. Though they knew the demonic names, they could not banish the beasts. They erred in identifying, no, so Sumptu dared to interrupt. It is as we feared, Matron Mother. The barrier of the Fair's Rest itself has been harmed. The demons cannot be banished. Quenthel turned away, staring instead at the looming compound of House Bayenry, her face showing that she was trying to process this startling and dangerous news. But we can kill them, so Sumptu offered. When we return to your chambers, I will bring forth a magical divination of the circular cavern where the battle was primarily waged. You will see, Matron Mother. The beasts are piled many deep, empty, destroyed husks. Quenthel looked at her incredulously. We won, so Sumptu said, and she did a fair job of acting as though she cared. A glorious victory. Few of our children of Menzo Berenzon were wounded, fewer still killed, and the demon horde is piled high in death. Quenthel's expression became very slightly more incredulous. 1,000 abyssal creatures dead, do you think? Quenthel asked. Perhaps twice that, so Sumptu replied. My dear So Sumptu, they are demons. Do you think the abyss will run out? An exhausted Manolan Fay walked into the nursery in her private quarters at House Bayenry. She faltered immediately and nearly fell over, seeing a young woman standing over Ivanel's small bed. Who? She started to ask, but stopped, her eyes going wide, as the woman, likely not yet 20 years of age, turned and flashed her a perfectly smug and wicked smile. You do not approve, mother? The girl, who was indeed Ivanel, asked. How? It's a simple spell, though an old one, Ivanel explained. A version of a haste Dwyamer, employed by a wizard in the days before the spell plague, before the time of troubles even. A wonderful spell, speeding the movements and attacks of the recipient, but one that came with the unfortunate, or in this case, fortunate, side effect of aging the recipient as if a year had passed. Manolan Fay was only half listening to the explanation. She was caught by the sheer beauty of this creature in front of her. Sheer beauty, she knew, beyond anything she could have imagined. Painful beauty. To look upon Ivanel was to despair because one could not be so beautiful as she. Her skin glowed with smoothness, like satin and steel woven as one, delicate yet impossibly strong. Her soft touch could ignite every nerve in one she seduced, teasing with softness, even as her fingers closed around the moaning victim's throat. Haste, Ivanel said suddenly, and more emphatically, breaking Manolan Fay out of her near stupor. You know the arcane arts? Manolan Fay stammered. The young woman laughed at her. I am one with the spider queen who sought to make the weave her own. Or have you forgotten? No, Manolan Fay stuttered, rather inanely, and trying to decipher the statement. Ivanel claimed to be one with the Spider Queen. How high were her ambitions, after all? You're often overwhelmed, Ivanel said with a nasty little laugh. No matter. Your most important duties are behind you now. She felt her expression turn curious. I am born, and clearly weaned, Ivanel explained. I have no need to suckle at your breast, nor any such desire. Not for nourishment, at least. The way she finished that thought had the high priestess's knees trembling. Despite the awfulness of the thought, she knew that she could not begin to deny Ivanel of anything she wanted. It took all of Manolan Fay's willpower not to throw herself prostrate on the floor at that moment, begging Ivanel to take her, or kill her, or do whatever she so desired. In that moment of terror, not just of Ivanel, but of her own weakness in the face of this mighty being, Manolan Fay truly appreciated the girl's claim that she was one with the Spider Queen. She was. That was clear now. This was not a child standing in front of her, not even one infused with the memories of Ivanel the Eternal. No, this was something much more. With a deceptively childlike laugh, Ivanel went through a series of movements and chanted softly. A slight glow came over her, and her hair, already thick and halfway down her back, grew a bit longer and curled at the bottom. I am 2 full decades of age now, she said. Do you think any young warriors would find me attractive? Manolan Fay wanted to answer that any living creature would fall before her, that any drow in Menzo Berenzon in all the world would not resist her for more than a heartbeat. 25, I think, Ivanel remarked, and Manolan Fay looked at her with puzzlement. 25 years, the girl clarified. I seek an age that will afford me the respect I need, but also an age of perfect beauty and sensuality. Is there any age where you would not be such either way? Manolan Fay heard herself saying. Ivanel's grin let the High Priestess know in no uncertain terms that she was caught within the web of this one's charms. You will do well when I am Matron Mother, Ivanel said. I am, Manolan Fay felt as if she had just been granted a great reprieve. I am your mother, she stammered, nodding eagerly. My pride, the girl waved her hand, and though she was across the room, the magical slap hit Manolan Fay so hard it sent her stumbling to the side. No more, Ivanel said. That duty is behind you and forgotten. You will survive and thrive, or you will fail, on your loyalty and service moving forward. I would think nothing of destroying you. Manolan Fay cast her gaze down, staring at the floor as she tried to find some way out of this. And then she felt a soft touch on her chin, and such a touch, 1,000 fires of pleasure erupting within her as Ivanel so easily lifted up her face to stare in her eye. Minolin Fay feared that she would go blind being so near such beauty. But you have an advantage, priestess, the girl said. I know that I can trust you. Show me that I can respect your service too, and you will find a wonderful life in House Bayenry, one of pleasure and luxury. Minolin Fay braced herself, expecting another slap, another brutal reminder of how quickly that could be taken away. It didn't come. Instead, Evenell gently brushed the tips of her fingers down the side of Minolin Fay's face, and that touch, so impossibly soft, so wondrously calling out to every nerve to bring them forth and lighting them with sensations of pure pleasure, left in its wake a line of pure ecstasy. Come, Evenell said. I believe it is time for Quenthel to learn the truth of her niece. You wish an audience with the matron mother? You will get me that meeting immediately, the girl answered. I give you this one task. Do not fail me. Minolin Fay held her breath then, feeling very trapped. The way Evenell had said that made it quite clear to her that it was one task for now, but there would be an endless stream of subsequent tasks later. And her personalization of the last remark, bidding Minolin Fay not to fail her instead of simply not to fail, showed the High Priestess that this dangerous child would simply not accept failure. This strange little daughter to whom she had given birth was the promise of great reward and the promise of perfect pain, tantalizing and terrifying all at once. It was bad enough for Minolin Fay that in Gromp's absence she survived only at the sufferance of Matron Mother Quenthel. But even worse was the thought that her only chance at flourishing might well be this dangerous child, whether reincarnation of Evenell the Eternal, or avatar of Lady Loth herself, or some weird mixture of the two. Dangerous. So very dangerous. Who is this that you bring to my private quarters? Quenthel asked, when Minolin Fay entered her chambers in House Bayenry unannounced. Look closely, the young drow woman said, holding her hand up to silence the High Priestess, and surely that, even more than her sheer beauty, tipped Quenthel off to the truth, as was revealed deliciously to Evenell by the expression in the matron mother's face. How is this possible? Quenthel stammered. You were killed in battle by a rogue drow who still lives, and yet you too still live, the young woman answered. And you would ask me how a few compressed years of aging is possible. Do you think it impossible, aunt? Quenthel's eyes flared with anger at that impertinence, being referred to as someone's aunt. She was the matron mother of Menzo Berenzon. Are you so meager in your understanding of magic, both divine and arcane, that such a minor feat seems impossible to you? Evenell prodded, and she couldn't suppress her sly grin as Minolin Fay gasped at the insult. Leave us, Evenell told the High Priestess. Stay, Matron Mother Quenthel roared, for no better reason than to counter the demands of the upstart young woman. Evenell looked over to see Minolin Fay trembling with uncertainty and palpable fear. Go, she said softly. I will win in here. And I assure you, if you remain, I will remember your hesitation. You will remain here, Quenthel said firmly, or you will feel the scourge of the matron mother. Minolin Fay wept and shook at the conflicting demands, appearing as if she would just crumble on the spot. Ah, yes, the five-headed scourge of Quenthel Bayenry, Evenell said. A fine weapon for a high priestess. But a meager baton for a matron mother. I am sure I will do better. Quenthel's eyes and nostrils flared as she reached for the scourge and brought it forth. The five snake heads of the whip, each imbued with the life essence of an imp, swayed eagerly and hungrily. Evenell laughed at her and told Minolin Fay to go. Still some dozen strides away, Quenthel grabbed her other weapon from her belt, a magical hammer, and with a growl she brought it swinging about. An image of that hammer appeared in the air behind Manolan Fay as she turned. It cracked on her shoulder, sending her sprawling. From her knees and hands, she couldn't help looking back at Quenthal, as did Ivanel. "I did not give you permission to smite her," the girl said evenly. With a growl, Quenthal swung again, more forcefully. Ivanel crossed her arms in front of her and waved them out wide. Again the hammer appeared, this time aiming for Ivanel's face. But as the spectral image descended, it hit a shimmering field the girl had enacted. As it plunged through, it came out instead in front of Quenthal, and she yelped as her own hard strike smacked her in the face and sent her stumbling backward to the ground. Not even bothering to stand back up, Manolan Fay scrambled away, making curious mewling noises all the way to the door. She slammed that door behind her as she exited. "You dare!" Quenthal cried, unsteadily trying to stand, blood streaming from one nostril and from the side of her face. "I dare. You think that a simple trick?" "Some dimensional warp of space," Quenthal spat, blood coming with every word.
"Against the likes of a spectral hammer," said the girl incredulously. "Do you not understand who I am?"
Quenthal found solid footing then, and hoisted her snake-headed scourge, replacing the hammer on her belt. She advanced, growling with every step. Ivanel put her hands on her hips, as petulantly as she could manage, and shook her head and sighed.
"Really, must it come to this?"
"You are an abomination," Quenthal retorted.
"You have so quickly forgotten the Festival of the Founding in the House of Burton Fay."
That stopped the advance of the matron mother, and she stood there, suddenly unsure, her eyes darting about.
"Expecting a Yoklul?" Ivanel teased. They both knew the truth now. "Did you not tell your brother to marry Manolan Fay, so that I would be born in and of House Bayenry?" Ivanel asked. "You even named me, did you not?"
"Oh, yes, except that you were instructed as such. Ivanel the Eternal, born once more to be your successor, yeah?"
Now Quenthal was herself looking for an escape, and here I am.
"You are a child."
"I am, in body."
"No," Quenthal demanded. "Not now, not yet. You are not old enough. Even with your magical physical advancement, you are but half the age to begin your training in Arachtinolith."
"My training?"
Ivanel asked with an incredulous laugh.
"Dear Quenthal, who in this city will train me?"
"Hubris,"
Quenthal said, but there was not much conviction in the roar.
"Ingoth is the wisest of the snakes on your scourge," said Ivanel. "Go ahead, High Priestess. Ask her."
"High Priestess!"
Quenthal yelled in protest. She came forward, closing the ground, lifting the scourge for a strike.
"High Priestess Quenthal,"
came the response, but not from Ivanel. It came from one of the heads on her scourge, from Ingoth. Quenthal looked at the snake in shock.
"She believes herself matron mother," Ivanel said to the snake. "Tell her the truth."
Ingoth bit Quenthal in the face. She staggered back, trying to sort it out, but not quickly enough understanding the terrible danger to her. Ingoth bit her again, and by that time the other four scourge heads had also sunk their fangs into Quenthal's tender flesh. Fires of poison burned through her. She should have thrown the scourge aside, of course, but she couldn't think quickly enough in that terrible moment. The snake struck again, and again after that, each bite filling her with enough venom to kill a score of drow. She stumbled, but still she held the scourge, and still the snakes bit at her. She fell backward, the weapon falling beside her, and as she writhed in fiery agony, the snakes bit her again, and again. She had never known such pain. She cried out for death to take her. And there was the child, Ivanel. She saw through bleary, bloody eyes, standing over her, looking down at her, smiling down at her. Darkness closed in from the corners of her vision. She did see Ivanel reaching down. She did feel Ivanel grasping the gathering of her gown. She felt light, as darkness engulfed her. She was light, she believed, because Ivanel lifted her up with just that one hand, so easily hoisted her from the floor. A pinprick of light broke the darkness, perhaps the tunnel to the demon web pits and eternity. But that pinprick widened, and Quenthel felt as if cool waters poured over the burning venom coursing in her veins. It was impossible. No spell could defeat that amount of deadly poison so quickly. But the light widened, and Quenthel realized that she was in her chair again, in her throne, the throne of the Matron Mother. And there was the young woman, Ivanel, staring at her, smiling at her. "Do you understand now?" Ivanel asked. Quenthel's mind wheeled. She was terrified that Ivanel was reading her every thought. She should be dead. The poison of any of her snakes would kill a dark elf. The repeated bites of all five would kill a dark elf in mere moments.
"You live," Ivanel answered the obvious question. "Yet no priestess could have administered enough healing, divine or alchemical, to pull you back from the death brought by your snake's venom."
Quenthel's eyes widened as her gaze drifted lower. As her eyes focused on the scourge, her scourge, that Ivanel carried. The five snakes wrapped lovingly around Ivanel's beautiful black arms.
"Fear not. I will fashion my own scourge," Ivanel explained. "Indeed, I look forward to it."
"Who are you?"
"You know."
Quenthel shook her head helplessly.
"You wonder why you are alive," said Ivanel. "Of course you do. Why would you not? Wouldn't I be better served to let you die?" "Oh, I see," she said with a perfectly evil grin. "You fear that I saved you from the snake poison, so that I might make your death even more painful."
Despite herself, Quenthel began to tremble and to gasp for air.
"Perhaps it will come to that, but it need not," said Ivanel. "You are fortunate, and that I do not wish to yet reveal myself to the ruling council and the city, and thus I desire your services. You see, for all who look upon House Bayenry, you will remain the Matron Mother. Only you and I will know better."
She paused there and cast a grin at Quenthel.
"You do know better," she said.
Quenthel swallowed hard.
"Who am I?"
Ivanel asked. And those five snake heads of Quenthel's scourge unwrapped from the girl's arm and came up hissing and swaying ominously, reaching Quenthel's way. Quenthel started to reply, but stopped when she noted Cora, the third and most potent viper, moving to strike.
"Think carefully," Ivanel said. "Prove to me that you are not too stupid to properly serve my needs."
Quenthel forced herself to close her eyes, to reach into the memories and wisdom of Ivanel the Eternal.
"Take your time, my aunt, my sibling, my daughter. Who am I?"
Quenthel opened her eyes.
"You are the Matron Mother of Manzo Berenson."
The girl's smile sent a thousand waves of warmth cascading through Quenthel, and the snake slithered back into the loving embrace of Ivanel's arm.
"Only you and I will know that," Ivanel explained. "Prove your worth to me. I will be in need of powerful high priestesses, of course, and perhaps a new headmistress of Arachtinilith. Are you worthy of such a position?"
Quenthel wanted to reply indignantly that she was already the Matron Mother. How could she not be worthy? But she said no such thing.
She nodded meekly and accepted the scourge when this young woman, this mere girl, handed it back to her. "Other houses hold you in contempt," Ivanel explained, walking aside as Quenthal composed herself and straightened in her throne. "They hold the name Vaenri in contempt. That cannot hold, of course. They will conspire. And if those conspiracies come to fruition, you will be their target. For now, at least." She spun gracefully on her heel, her smile wide. "Perhaps they will kill you," she said happily. "But perhaps not. And in that event, and if you have served me well in the 10 days coming, then you will survive this. You will serve in my house, Vaenri, and in my academy, and you will know honor and glory and great power. You see, I do not fear you, because you know now, do you not?" Quenthal nodded. "You will never turn against me, because nothing any of them can do to you will be as awful as what I would happily do to you." Ivanel bounced over and kissed Quenthal on the cheek, and as she pulled back, the 5 snakes of Quenthal's scourge came up beside her other cheek, their flicking tongues tickling her. "Go back to your matron mothering," Ivanel said, skipping away. "I will inform you when I need you, and what I need from you." And with that, she was gone.